You're listening to the Illuminaire podcast, where we dive deep into behavioral health topics and shine a bright light on the forces shaping this industry's future, from research and technology to business and investment and more. Here's your host, Dr. Ronit Molko.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Ronit Molko, and thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Illuminaire podcast. This week, we are talking about seniors and elders and the incredible wisdom and life lessons that this segment of our population has to share with us. I'm thrilled to welcome David Romanelli to this week's episode. David is a number one best-selling author, international speaker, and guide to bringing old wisdom and ancient healing practices to our modern lives. David initiates connection and conversation between the old and the young, our elders in their 80s, 90s, and 100s, fought in World War II, survived the Holocaust, and marched for civil rights. They are our most precious resource of wisdom and history. Yet most elders lack a voice in popular culture and live out their final years in isolation. We can do better. We have to do better. David, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I'm so excited to talk about this. First of all, I wanted to start up with something a little bit different because your family has gone through an incredible year with your daughter's cancer diagnosis. And I was hoping, you know, you shared with me in a conversation we had about how this kind of woke your family up to living a different life. And I would love if you would share some of that with our audience.
Yes, my daughter was has overcome successfully leukemia and she's doing great. She's been in remission for over a year now, still in the treatment, but the easier part of the treatment. And, it really definitely is not the way things are supposed to go down in life. And you're not planning for this, but sometimes life throws you curveballs. And it was a huge wake up call for my family on appreciating and being grateful and what health really feels like and what health really means, and just totally reshuffled our deck. Before this, I was very focused on the conversations with elders. And then I took about a year where I couldn't think straightly about anything other than just getting my daughter back to perfect health. But now I'm starting to revisit the conversations with elders and coming to it from a different perspective, because basically my two points of expertise now are kids overcoming cancer, which is a total badass warriors. And you go to the oncology floor of the children's hospital and you see these kids, you know, my daughter's diagnosis in the cancer world is like, it's the best possible diagnosis you can have. Right. So we felt so grateful. I mean, for most people, it sounds like the most traumatic thing in the world, and it is, but there are far more and difficult diagnoses. So we feel actually really fortunate. But when you're on that floor of the hospital or at the cancer clinic for a treatment, it really is intense and it's a lot to take in. And these kids are super courageous and they teach us how to come to our challenges, I think, differently and certainly courageously and with a childlike, especially the young patients like my daughter. She's four. She was three a lot of the year she was being treated. And it's like when you bring that childlike joy and resilience to this kind of situation, you do a lot better than when you come in a place of fear and anxiety. And then the other point of expertise is the very old among us. And I've learned a lot from that population who tends to be isolated and can look back on what worked for them and what didn't and what advice has stood the test of time. So those are my two points of expertise. I'm proud to say I think it's very interesting.
That's great. You mentioned to me that you changed the way your family was living because you realized that the energy in your house, you know, you were focused on maybe the wrong things or other things. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Well, yeah, you just get caught up in the day-to-day, you know, like last 4th of July, we were in the children's hospital for 5 nights. And on the 4th of July weekend, that's not where you want to be. And I learned this 4th of July, we're at home as a family. And one thing I think about the 4th of July is you want to have like some kind of plan. What are you doing on the 4th of July? You put this pressure on yourself to do something cool with your family. Make sure you're showing your kids a great weekend. And we were just happy to be together, you know, for a probably about 6 weeks last year in total, or not, maybe not, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, we had children's hospital stays. And, you know, during COVID, it was just my wife could stay or one adult, not the whole family. So we were separated as a family for a lot of nights last year. And that's difficult on a young family with young children. And you realize there's a lot of value in being together with your squad, you know, and when your squad is separated, it makes you realize the importance of teamwork and your family and how we each play a role in each other's lives, and not to take that for granted, but to value and honor and appreciate that.
Amazing. So how did you get interested in your work with the elder population?
My last surviving grandparent, 2010, was in a really nice old age home in LA, and I would visit her and pick her up for lunch, and it was so depressing. And it was like completely disconnected from the community. A lot of the people there, it felt to me like they were put out to pasture. And here I was in the yoga world, and you know, the Instagram, the 32-year-old yoga instructor with a big Instagram following becomes the source for wisdom, and the 88-year-old Holocaust survivors dying a lonely death in the old age home. And I just felt like something wasn't right. And if we could reintroduce these elders to the community, give them a voice, wake people up one by one to the way we treat older people in our country, that could be of value.
Yeah, there's a huge disconnect in the way elders are treated in this country compared to other countries where families live together multi-generationally. So why do you think there is such a disconnect? Why do you think, you know, other countries, families live together multi-generationally? You know, you have three generations in one home. Why do you think there's such a disconnect in our culture here in Western society?
I think the people are just driven, that we work so hard. We're driven to succeed. And there's a lot more emphasis on work and living alone. You know, you grow up and you want your independence. America is all about independence. And we seek out our own life and our own path. And there's a lot to be valued there. But I think there's some parts about the American system that are deeply flawed. You know, we're a young country. And compared to some of these other nations out there, we're like the prepubescent teenager. You know, we're good at sports. We're young, we're athletic. We've got a lot of blemishes like a teenager. And we're just kind of learning our way. And some of these older cultures have more experience in what works and what doesn't work. And we need more intergenerational time to get the advice. I mean, some of the advice that I've heard on marriage, the advice I've heard from the oldest of old on marriage and work-life balance and health and well-being is just the very best advice. And it's really impacted how I live, how I parent, and how I raise my kids and my priorities. And I can't speak highly enough about spending time with older people who, especially older people who seem like they figured something out and they're glowing and they're happy and vibrant. You know, they know something. And you got to ask the questions to get the wisdom.
Right, right. You said that this journey with your daughter changed your perspective on the elderly. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I mean, a lot of the elderly, like, you know, I'm Jewish and I've spoken to Holocaust survivors many times. And I wrote a book a few years ago, and I interviewed several Holocaust survivors, and I've become close with a few of them. And, you know, I'd never been through anything like that before. And God willing, that never happened. We don't have to go through anything like that. But to walk a young child through cancer treatment maybe starts to touch that territory where you question God and you question how difficult life can be. And, you know, you are pushed to the brink of your capacity. And it's much different, obviously, than what they went through and the terrible conditions of the Holocaust. It's not the same. But there are moments when your child is gripping the sides of the hospital bed, screaming for more anti-nausea medicine, and it takes you to the brink. It's not the same. It's different. But, you know, it puts you in the red zone. And it really, like, taught me to realize when life is relatively calm and easy, and your biggest problem is like, you can't get a hold of your contractor or, you know, even like if your bills are intense this month and you're not sure, you know, you're stressed out about money, it's not the same, or so I've learned, as life or death situations,
right?
And the mortality of like a child or a family member. And I know a lot of people listening, you're aware of that. I mean, a lot of people have been through traumatic experiences, but we all need to continually wake each other up to gratitude, you know, living more awake and alive. And how can you make the most of today instead of just letting today blend into every other day? It's just a hard way to live.
Yeah. You mentioned advice that some of the people you've spoken to have given you about things like marriage and work-life balance and well-being. Can you share some of those pieces of wisdom?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing I learned was I wrote a book called Happy is the New Healthy that was inspired by the oldest lady I met, who lived to be 111. So it's very rare. We call that super centenarians. There's only about 60 globally out of 7 billion. There's only about 60 we know about who are 110 or older. And joie de vivre is often in their formula, the joy of life. Like, you have to enjoy being alive, you know, because if your whole thing is like this regimented approach to work and you don't have that sense of joy and community and balance, you reach a point where your body just gives out and you're just frustrated, you know? And so you have to build in that, the joy, that you savor it. Like that 111-year-old lady, her 3 tips to me were sex, vodka, and spicy food. And the oldest lady ever, she lived to be 122. Her name was Jean Calment. And she ate 2 pounds of chocolate every week.
Wow.
You know, they enjoy it.
I'm definitely on track of eating 2 pounds of chocolate a week is okay.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. You gotta enjoy it. And I mean, it's so common now that we put our head on the pillow to go to sleep at the end of a day. And it's just, you're tired and you're busy and you don't remember a single thing that happened that day, like, you know, and that's where that's no way to live your life. So that's the big thing, is like, just enjoy it. Don't put your head to the grindstone to the extent that you don't remember anything. The other thing that I've learned a lot about with marriage is, listen, if your marriage doesn't, I mean, that 111-year-old was married 5 times. So if it doesn't work, and sometimes people are brokenhearted and things don't work out and it's just part of the deal, and you get back and you keep trucking. But for a lot of people who have been happily married 70 years, you know, it's that advice that you can't hold on to the anger. And you have to solve your issues and have this immediate conflict resolution. You have to dig in and clear it. And also, a big thing that I've learned is you have to have balance in your life. If you can't just be a hard worker and let your marriage go to shit, and that's very common too. You know, so you have to have some balance, which is tricky in our culture because we all work as Americans harder than most. So those are some, I mean, I could keep going on and on, but those are a few things that I think were really, also with parenting, the best ones were people whose kids like being friends with them, whose kids admire them. That's really interesting to me. When, you know, like one lady I wrote about in my book said her mom has this special quality where when you walk in the room, she stops what she's doing. She looks you in the eye. She's totally present with you, and she cherishes her mom for that gift. And I don't think most people, myself included, we don't really do that. And it's something that you can practice right now. And next time someone you care about walks in the room, stop what you're doing and like engage them with your presence, you know? So just like basic stuff like that. It's not like crazy complicated advice.
Yeah. We're too busy rushing through the day to day of life.
Totally.
I listened to the webinar that you did with that woman who wrote a book, that woman had survived the Holocaust, whose mother had put her on a train.
Yeah.
And she talked about her and her sister. And that was just a fascinating and beautiful, very poignant story. I appreciate you bringing those to life because it's just such a good reminder.
Yeah. Her name's Ruth Steinfeld. And she had to say goodbye to her mom at a very young age. And she sent her, and it's called the Kinder Transport, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Sent her. And she was hidden in the French countryside And then she emigrated to America after she survived with her sister, and she emigrated to America, and she couldn't, if she heard it, she started a hair salon in Houston. And anytime she heard a German accent, she cringed. And she decided she needed to go back to Germany in 1981. And she knocked on the door of her childhood home, and an older lady answered. And she just, you know, you can imagine like that she lived a beautiful life with her family, a nice upbringing in a lovely part of Germany. And then all hell broke loose, and that the lady opened that door to her childhood home, and the emotions just exploded out of her. And the older lady knew what had happened, and that this was a Holocaust survivor. And the older lady and her embraced, and there was a moment of forgiveness that she felt toward her people, and it completely changed her perspective on life that you can forgive. Because I think a lot of Holocaust survivors understandably want nothing to do with that word, forgiveness. And so that this lady, it took a lot of courage, you know, to be able to open her heart. So it's a great lesson for people to hear her story who are closed off to someone or something and don't want to forgive. Because if you can forgive for that, I mean, you can really, you can open your heart to anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It was such a beautiful lesson around forgiveness. And I also remember her speaking about how when she got to America, she was with her sister, I think they were 16, living in an apartment or in a room together, and how the American contemporaries were jealous because they had independence, and they were so envious of these people who had families. And just that kind of dichotomy of the appreciation for family from her side and the appreciation for independence as part of
that. I don't even remember that. That's interesting. And that speaks to what we were just talking about, because in America, everyone wants to be so separate from family. I think it's a blind spot because we don't recognize the gifts that we get. When my daughter was overcoming cancer this last year, you know, my mom lives in LA, and it was the height of COVID, and she couldn't come out, and we were in desperate need of family support. My mother-in-law was amazing, but we needed another hands on deck. And you realize, you know, it takes a village, especially when you're doing something like what we were dealing with. We need each other to support each other through our hardest moments in life. You know, you need that elder wisdom and those extra hands. And this need for kind of thinking that you can go at it alone, it's not good for your mental health. I don't think it adds to our joy. And I think it's a deep flaw in our national psyche that we need to have a conversation about. And that's why I like doing these intergenerational events. I call them drinks with your elders, because I think young people wake up to like, wow, this 87-year-old lady who I wouldn't even see on the street, she's pretty cool.
Right.
You know? And I think young people are like, it might be cool to have a friend who's 87. I don't have any friends that are 87. It's a whole generation that, you know, there's no connection to, and something's wackadoodle about that.
Yeah. I've seen, I recently read an article. I don't remember which European country it was, but you can go to the library, and instead of checking out a book, they have elders sitting, and you can go sit with an elder and learn about their life story.
You're kidding.
No. Yeah. I'll look for it. I will look for it, and I'll send it to you. I just read it, and it had a photograph of, you know, you can basically borrow an elder for a couple of hours and listen to their life. Yeah. And also there are, you know, I work in autism, mostly in developmental disability. And as the field is trying to help young adults become more independent and learn the skills they need to go to college and have jobs and things, they're piloting having young adults live with, in elder communities, and kind of have the elders kind of mentor while the young adults also take care of the elders in some respects. And that's also modeled after, I don't remember again which country, it was Sweden or the Netherlands, one of those, where they have Denmark, where they have elders living together with young people and kind of mentor. It's symbiotic mentoring.
Yeah.
And how powerful that is.
Yeah. That I've heard about. And I think we're still a ways off from that in our country. I have had my finger off the pulse for the past year because of what we've been through. But I just met with an old elder, and I'm focused on doing my first Drinks with Your Elders event in a long time with elder authors who who have published books. And so that I'm getting back in the game, but I have had my finger off the pulse with the latest news. So thank you for sharing with me.
I'll look for it and send it to you. Speaking of this, what are some of the ways here locally in the US that you think people can get more connected with the elderly population?
I think the biggest thing is you just have to reach out and make a friend, because it's not the most glamorous thing. Like, you know, I was going to interview this, somebody's like, you have to meet this 87-year-old lady. She came out with a book. And I went over there and, you know, in all honesty, I was like, I'm busy. I have things to do. And gosh, didn't seem, even after all the work I've done, it didn't seem like the most important thing to do. And, you know, that's the way we kind of discriminate against that population. They're not in the mix and they're not super relevant. Their social media platform isn't going to move the needle for you. And then I sat down with her and it was like so refreshing, and she was so vibrant, and she didn't have the same things pulling on her attention like everybody else that's young does. And I just left there feeling like she had so much to offer me in terms of advice and wisdom and her energy and her story. And I had a lot to offer her in terms of that I could introduce her to the community. So I think that, you know, you have to make the time for it and you have to just reach out, and that they'll present themselves. They'll be in your consciousness and you'll just hear about it. You'll see someone sitting at the coffee shop. And you just have to kind of like, you have to reach for it a little bit. It doesn't just like show up in your front door per se.
Right. I love your book, Happy is the New Healthy. Such a great book.
Thank you.
You talk about, you know, is where you've been broken a fracture, or is it where the light gets through, right? Like Leonard Cohen's quote, you know, there's a crack in everything. That's where the light comes through.
Yeah.
What can you share with us about, you know, finding happiness in these difficult circumstances? You talked about some elders that you've spoken to being really resistant to the aging process and others really celebrating it. And what have you learned from those two approaches or those two experiences?
I mean, it's the whole thing with life. It's like you're headed upstream and you make life difficult and everything is a pain in the butt and everything's a struggle and a grind. Even if you have all the resources and, you know, you can check off all the bucket, the things in life. There's a lot of people like that. It's upstream every day. And people age like that too. It's like, you know, I'm getting older. People are dying. It's such a headache. Oh, I missed when I was young. You know, it's upstream and it makes it harder. And there's other people who are going downstream. And like that lady I just told you about who was 87, and she's like, what can I learn now? She took the yoga teacher training. She wrote a book at 87. She swims laps every day. It's like, what new awesome thing can I embrace now? You know, what relationship can I experience that's brand new? What cool thing can I learn from my grandkids today? Like, you know, that's downstream. And that's something that we start practicing right this moment, is to catch yourself when you're going upstream and turn it around, let it go. It's a practice that I think you have to really start when you're young in order to embody it when you're older, but it can happen anytime.
Yeah, that's such a being in flow, right?
Yeah.
Not going against the tide.
Yeah. It was the biggest thing with everyone talks about ayahuasca, and I tried it a few times, and I remember a point where everybody around me was getting nauseous, and, you know, it causes you to purge and it's physically taxing. And there was people all around me like throwing up, and I really don't like to throw up. And I felt the voice, call it the spirit, the grandmother, whatever they say, or my own body. And it basically said, if you relax and you surrender, this will be a lovely, blissful experience. If you fight it and resist, you're going to be sick. And that was a constant shift I had to make throughout the 6 hours, is to relax and surrender and not make myself sick. And I think that was, for me, the great lasting lesson from that is just like, that's how we live our lives. We make ourselves crazy. We make our family members crazy. And we don't have to do that.
Well, that's a beautiful note to end on. So thank you, David. I really appreciate it. I've ever since I first came across you through Danny, it's just, I do your meditations every day. I listen to them and to your stories. I listened to your story over the weekend about that woman who survived the building collapse in Florida.
Wasn't that wild?
That was just so interesting. Maybe you want to share a little bit about that with our listeners, because that was just such an amazing story.
Yeah, it was a lady in the Surfside building who I was reading a story about her, and there was like a sequence of events that one after the other, you know, one, she didn't take her sleeping pill because she had an early flight. She woke up at 1 a.m. because the door, the breeze blew the door open. So the door hit the wall and she woke up. She saw a crack in the wall and realized like something terrible was happening. She searched for her clothes and her credit card and her purse, which she had packed already the night before because she had to leave earlier. Usually she would have needed to search for it. She blew out the candle and she ran into the hallway because she realized that something terrible was happening, and she didn't know there was a set of stairs by her door. So she took the far stairs at the end of the hallway, and as she was going down those stairs, the building collapsed and she miraculously survived. But it was like five or six things that if she missed any of those clues or sequences, she would have died, because if she just slept through it, of course, if she didn't pack her credit card, she would have wasted 30 seconds looking to do that. If she took the stairwell that was right by her door, she wouldn't have made it. If she didn't pay attention to the snake crack in the wall, you know, if she didn't hear the door open from the wind. So there's like a miracle. And I think it's a great message that we're always being, if you believe this, there are always signs and hints and clues guiding us. And a lot of the time we're not awake and aware to those clues, and we're missing what's available to us. So it's just this idea of like, there's a great book actually called Signs. I can't remember the author, but it's a blue cover, a very touted book. You can just look it up, Signs. And it talks about like being attentive to these things or not. But that to me was just kind of a miracle.
Being aware.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time. And I really appreciate your wisdom.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Illuminaire Podcast with Dr. Renit Mulco. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe, rate, review, and share our show with other listeners. See you next week.